As kids, we've all wondered why our furry friend is doing something. Why does my dog chase their tail? Why does my cat jump 5 feet in the air when a cucumber is behind them? What is my bunny thinking about when they're staring into space? Some of us have found the answers to our questions through our own research and other means. Some are no longer curious about the answers, and others may still be wondering what the answer is. So for today's episode of the podcast, we asked some kids to submit their questions, and we're going to ask a veterinarian to answer them. My name is Kate Tuttle, and I'm 12 and in grade 7. I'm going to be your host for this special episode of the podcast. Dr. Mike is sitting down with us today to answer these pressing questions. He's a veterinarian with the Tartan Tails Veterinary Hospital and the expert who coined the term interdigital fluffs. Dr. West, can you explain what the term interdigital fluffs means?
Well, I'm really glad that you brought that up. It's actually the correct term in Black's Veterinary Dictionary is interdigital fluffies. And it's those little tufty bits of fur between the toes of medium to long-haired cats. And any anatomical feature needs to have a name, and that's what that one's called.
Fluffies, they are little floofs.
Exactly.
Makes sense. Okay, let's jump into the questions. Why does getting your pet fixed sometimes change their personality?
Oh, that's a really good question. I don't know if I would say that getting them fixed changes the personality so much as it does change behaviors. And mostly the behaviors that it changes are ones that we want to change anyway. So when we fix a pet, that means we're going to spay a female or neuter a male animal. So we're taking away a lot of their reproductive hormones. And so when we take those away, we take away a lot of reproductive behaviors, which are things that we probably don't want in animals that we have in our house. So, for example, when a cat goes into heat, they can be very loud and very disruptive in their behavior. And when we spay them, we take that away. So I think when we fix them, they retain the desirable bits of their personalities, but we will take away some of those behaviors that are not so sociable.
Our second question is, why do cats make biscuits?
Ah, yes, that adorable action of when they're kind of rhythmically pressing down with their paws. Couple of reasons. I don't know if you've ever seen a kitten nursing on its mother. Well, when they nurse, it's so cute. When they nurse, they're latched on to the mother's milk glands, and they're actually massaging with their paws to cause the milk letdown. So it's a way of giving them nutrients when they're really young. But those behaviors are retained. And so I think it's a sign of pleasure, but also also they do have glands in their feet for marking. So it can also be marking and communication too.
It's like when they're going around their bed making biscuits, they're either spreading their scent or like, ooh, I'm comfy.
Exactly. I think that is very well put.
How do cats make a purring noise?
That is a great question. And I can tell you, I've been asked that, I've been stumped with that question through the years, usually by the children of people who bring their pets to me in the examining room. Now, just to give you a little perspective, a veterinarian in a busy practice, often the only thing we're thinking about is clinical things like illnesses and how to fix them. And so when we get these lovely general knowledge questions, sometimes we're embarrassingly caught off guard. But I have learned how it happens. So cats, you probably felt they will purr when they breathe in and they breathe out. And the sound is created by rhythmic vibration of their vocal cords as the air is going in and coming out. So the vocal cords, there's two of them. So it's kind of like a reed instrument, like a clarinet, or even more accurately, like a double reeded instrument, like an oboe. Mm-hmm. And so that creates the sound. But so that cats don't have to, this is the bit that I thought was really cool, is cats, they don't have to really think about that action. Their brain is creating things called neuronal oscillations, which is, that is what's going on in the brain that's creating that rhythmic action in the muscles of their vocal cords. I thought that was very cool.
That is very interesting. Our fourth question is, why do cats like to bathe in the sun?
I think just pleasure. It's just comfortable. It's warm. Cats like comfort. So I think it's just that. I think it's nothing more than doing something that is pleasurable for them.
Yeah. Checks out.
Thank you.
Why do cats like to be scritched in certain areas?
I think that comes from cats when they're in a group that's stable and they all know each other, they spend a lot of time grooming each other for a variety of reasons, sometimes just as part of establishing and maintaining their social group, also just as a result of cleaning. And so I think when we're scritching them, we're kind of simulating the grooming of another cat. You know, cats have a spiky tongue, so there's a little bit of abrasion. So I think we're kind of simulating that grooming from another cat. And also, there's certain spots where they don't like us to go. So a lot of cats don't like their tummies being scritched, though there are some exceptions.
Yeah.
And I think there's also a marking thing because cats have glands in their cheekbones, and that's why they walk around rubbing on things. And so I think some cats really like having their cheekbones scritched. I know mine does. And I think that's because she's like, well, I'm kind of marking him, but I don't actually have to do any of the work because he's doing the work. Real cat sort of behavior.
Yeah, no, I was hanging out with the cats before the podcast, and there was one that had been new, and she was rubbing all over the cage.
Yeah.
Especially on her bed.
Yeah, just making sure everybody knows this is mine.
Right. Why do cats lay on your clothes when you leave them on the bed?
I think that's related to, again, this social group thing with cats, and scent is really important. And I think, you know, we're part of their social group. I mean, sometimes I think that they think of us as their staff, but we are part of their social group. And I think they're basically enjoying that social group in a sort of indirect way by lying on our clothes and taking in our scent.
Very fun. Why do dogs like me? Sometimes cats don't.
That is a great question. Dogs have been domesticated for a very, very long time. And so part of that process is ensuring their place in the human world is ensuring that they're likable to us. Whereas cats, that process is far less recent. And I think we see a great variety of domesticity between cats. You might see a cat that's super friendly and likes you, or you might see a cat who's perhaps one generation from being feral, so being wild, and those cats are never going to be super affectionate towards very many people just because they're used to life in the world wild. And when you're living in the wild, you can't really trust anything because it's all about survival.
Yeah, so like the dogs are like, oh yeah, we know these things. These mm-hmm. things give us food if we're nice. And the cats are like, we can get our own food if we need.
that is a good point too.
The eighth question is, why do dogs wag their tails when they're happy?
That is all about communication. And in fact, the tails, I think if we were dogs, we would recognize a whole vocabulary of tail movements that us as people, like a behavioral expert, would probably recognize quite a lot of that vocabulary. So it's just a way of expressing to other dogs, this is how I'm feeling. I'm happy. If a dog is approaching another dog and they're wiggling their butt around and they're wagging their tail in a kind of loose, relaxed way, that's telling the other dog, I'm happy. it's all good. I think we can be friends. But if that dog has its tail straight up and really tense and with a really tight wag, that's kind of implying that things are not so good. And it's a dog's, there's no benefits to them getting into an altercation with another dog. So the tail is a great way of transmitting that information before they get too close to the other dog. So they can, if one dog doesn't really want to interact, that's a great way of telling the other dog so they can stay apart. No need for any fisticuffs.
And our ninth question is, why do rabbits poop round?
Wow, that's a good one. So yeah, rabbit poop is more complicated than you might think. There are actually two kinds of rabbit poop. So there's the little dry, round, kind of fibrous looking poop, which I assume is what this question's about. And that's made in the colon and the rectum of the rabbit. And that poop has very few nutrients left in it. So the rabbit's body has taken all the goodness out of it, all the vitamins, all the minerals, all the sugars out of it. And all that's left is this little round, dried up husk. The reason it's round is just how the smooth muscle in the colon of the rabbit creates those poops. But there's another type of poop that rabbits make that is really important. And that, when they eat grass, it goes through their digestive system. And in their cecum, which is the bit of the digestive system between the small intestine and the large intestine, that grass is subjected to bacteria. So they have a ton of bacteria in there, and they're actually using the bacteria to digest that grass. Because grass, I mean, if you've ever tried to chew on grass, totally indigestible. We can't digest it. We can't get anything good out of it. But in rabbits, it goes through into the cecum. The bacteria help to break it down and digest it. And then it turns into the first type of poop, which is called a cecotroph, which is kind of shiny and moist compared to those little dry things that we're used to. And they actually, at nighttime, they actually eat that, which sounds nasty, but it's just how their digestive system has evolved. And then that pre-digested, those pre-digested poops, they eat them, and then their intestines can get the maximum amount of goodness out of it. And then that works its way through. And then what you're left with on the second time around are those tiny little dry round poops.
Mm. So they poop one thing, they eat it, and then it turns into the other poop.
Yeah. So they get two chances to get all the nutrients out of that grass.
Huh. And our 10th question is, why do dogs eat things that make them sick, like chocolate and grapes?
Yeah, I thought about that one. I think things like chocolate and grapes, I had to think back to dogs in the wild. You know, when they first evolved, they would not be exposed to those kinds of toxins. Those are very much human-created toxins. And things like chocolate and grapes, grapes, maybe not such a great example, but who knows? Maybe wild dogs avoided grapes. I'm not sure. But domesticated animals, I think the smell and the flavor of those items overcomes any kind of warning signs that their body or their nose might give them to avoid those things. So that's just a result of my thinking. There are no references for that.
Yeah, so. There might be some more research into that one.
Yes, there might be.
And why do ferrets smell is our next one.
Again, it's all about communication. Smell, really, really important for many, many species. Just a way of communicating with other ferrets and other animals. Most of the smell in ferrets comes from their anal glands. And that produces a really smelly, smelly liquid. And every time they have a little poop, there's a little bit of that liquid, but that's actually that ferret's calling card. So, and that's their way of telling other ferrets or other animals, I'm around.
Do ferrets have, like, each individually have a specific smell?
Yes. Each one of them would have that smell would be unique. Same with dogs, same with cats. It would be unique to that individual, and those species have a sense of smell that's able to distinguish between individuals, at least enough to know, oh, this is somebody else's territory. I better steer clear.
Yeah. Very, very interesting. Our next one, also slightly about ferrets. Why do ferrets and cats like to be squished in small spaces?
I think for this, ferrets in particular, they were originally bred to hunt rodents. So when I worked in England for a while, and you know, folks in the country would have ferrets that they had trained to kill rodents as part of their work on a farm. So these fellows would come into my consulting room and they'd have a couple of ferrets in their jacket pocket. There was no carriers or anything like that. They just popped the ferrets out and I do whatever it was that I needed to do. So ferrets, small spaces, they're all about, you know, hunting down rodents. I think cats, it's just about being safe. You can, if you got four walls around you, there's no way somebody can sneak up on you. So you can kind of sleep in a secure fashion.
Yeah, there's quite a few photos of cats out there squishing into like mugs.
Yes, that's. I think that's taking it even beyond the safety.
That's just them being like,
Yeah, that's them preparing for the internet, I think.
Yeah. Our next one is, why does my cat rub their face on things?
That one, I think we chatted a little bit about that. That's because of those glands in their cheeks. So they're basically taking possession. And I'll tell you, a funny example of this, my wife plays the piano for a living, so she spends a lot of time practicing. And our cat, Spitty, has learned to jump on the piano bench and she'll just stick her face up. And as my wife's arm moves as she's playing the piano, it will actually rub against her cheek. So Spitty's learned how to spread her scent without actually doing anything at all. That's such a cat thing to do.
Yeah, figure out the most you can get out doing the least.
Absolutely.
And number 14 is, can companion animals have identical twins?
Yes, they can. That is, it's very, very rare. And I think it's much harder to tell than it is in people. But if an egg has been fertilized and then it divides into two separate eggs, you can have identical twins. But very, very rare and hard to tell. I think you actually have to do some fairly complicated testing to tell if two animals are identical twins. Mm-hmm. But yes, it's possible.
If they're identical twins, would they have different smells for their like scent?
That is a really good question that I'm going to have to draw a blank on. Oh. One assumes, but I don't, because I think the smell is a lot of it's related to glandular secretions and maybe that interaction with bacteria. But here I'm starting to definitely get out of my comfort zone.
Yeah. It was a bit of a, like, do you know this? Like, you were a little iffy on the identical twins.
So. It's a very good question.
Yes. And why and how do cats land on their feet?
Well, cats are, actually, they don't always land on their feet. Mm-hmm. So it depends on the circumstances. Now, a reason a lot of cats do end up, you know, under circumstances where they say fall and they do land on their feet is because they're fast twitch muscles. So the muscles that cause really fast movements are way quicker than ours. So that's, I've learned that over the years in veterinary practice. If a cat has decided it's going to bite me, I can't get out of the way in time because they are just way faster than I am. So they do engage those same things when they're righting themselves, if they have actually fallen, but they're not always able to right themselves.
Yes. I've seen like the technicalities, like squirrels, when they jump, they like spread. There's like a whole bunch of mechanics they mm-hmm. do to land. Okay.
Yep. And you've probably seen the videos on the internet where the cats don't actually land. Okay.
I had a cat, we got him when he was really little because, like, his family was, like, his mom was sick and it passed down to a lot of the kids, but he made it. And he, like, he hadn't really learned how to jump. When he was younger, we had to like lift him down from the couch arm, and it was like, if you can't even jump up or down, how are you getting up there in the first place?
Yes, he probably needed the example of an older cat to tell him how to do that properly.
Yeah. He could not jump very well. Our next one is, why do some pets wear shoes?
I think that's just because of sensitivity, usually to the salt on the ground. So I know, certainly I have a dog, he doesn't. The first few times that they use salt on the ground is terrible. So we put the little booties on him. He doesn't like the booties, but he likes them more than he likes the salt. And then after a couple of weeks, he kind of, his feet wear into it and he's good again. So that's usually the reason. Sometimes traction as well. So older dogs on kind of wood floors can be quite slippery. So some folks actually use booties in the house, so those older dogs have a little better traction so they don't kind of slip out and pull the Bambi move.
Yeah. I've also seen a few dogs in the summer on like cement or concrete because it gets really hot.
Yeah.
Sun. It's global warming.
It's good protection.
Yes. Why do cats not like wearing things?
I think it just doesn't work for them. Cats, you know, don't fence me in. They're all about independence, and in particular, they don't seem to like it. I think, now this doesn't really explain this, but wearing things with a coat, the insulating property of an animal's coat comes from the air between the hairs. So if you squish that down, then you're actually going to reduce the insulating properties of that animal's coat. So some dogs with a big old fluffy coat, you know, they can cope with very low temperatures. So there you go. We switched away from cats, and I just don't think they like clothes.
Yeah. They're like, I will squish myself into the things I can't get out of. You can't. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to do that.
Exactly. It's all about their choice.
No. Our next question is, I saw a dog wearing a baby sleeper. Why?
My guess with this one is that dog might have had a surgery, and that might be the owner's way of trying to stop that dog from licking at its incision. Or maybe the dog is allergic to something and is really itchy, and just having that sleeper on there is kind of distracting the dog from the itchiness. Those are a couple of reasons I could think why that would happen.
Also, maybe gives an extra layer of protection from their nails.
It could, yes, absolutely. Or protection from, say, puddles.
Yeah.
So.
Our next one is, do puppies lose their baby teeth?
Yes, they certainly do, between 4 and 6 months of age. So I talk to a lot of clients about toothbrushing, and it's a really good time to introduce an animal to that when they're really young. Just get them used to it. But you have to be really careful. If you succeed in getting your puppy used to having their teeth brushed, you have to kind of stop between 4 and 6 months, because with all those teeth dropping out, it can be quite painful. So, but they certainly do.
That actually ties into a different one.
Okay.
21, should I brush my dog's teeth?
Yes, that is a good question. And the answer is yes, you should. Having said that, and this goes back to what I said about puppies, you want to start young, because if you say you had a 6-year-old dog and you think, okay, I think I need to brush my dog's teeth. I didn't know this, but now I know it. Let's get on with it. Got to be careful, because by that point, a lot of dogs already have established dental disease. So imagine what it would feel like if you had dental disease and all of a sudden you decide, oh, let's start brushing my teeth today. It can be painful. So best thing, especially with an older dog, take them in, get their teeth assessed. If anything needs to be fixed, get it fixed. And then you can start brushing to keep them clean after that.
All right. And back to where we were is, why does my cat wreck my couch?
That your cat is, again, it comes down to communication. The cats a big way that cats mark is when they're clawing, they're actually, there's scent glands in their paws. So they're leaving their scent, but they're also leaving a visual message. So the damage that they're doing, you may have seen this outside. You see, say, a small tree that's been all clawed up. That's a message. That's a sign to other animals that this is my territory. So they don't mean to destroy their couch. They're just taking ownership.
All right. And why don't my dog and cat need a regular shower like I do?
Yeah, that's a great question. And for the most part, this is not 100% true, but for the most part, they're pretty good at grooming themselves in combination with the natural oils that help to keep their coat shiny. Now, again, not 100%. Say long-haired cats, they can get quite dirty and they struggle to keep themselves clean. Or a dog that spends a lot of time outside running around in the mud, they're probably going to need a bath. But generally, they're designed to look after themselves, except for things that are really obviously messy. So
yeah, like the long-haired cats, like that tongue can't quite reach all of that fur. There is a lot of fur there.
That is exactly true.
And the next one is, why do my cat and dogs eat grass?
Yeah, that is, so cats and dogs, I think the reason they do that is often to take care of some kind of digestive issue. So for example, cats with hairballs, that can be a way that they use to purge a hairball. I mean, bits of grass, if you've ever kind of run them between your hands, they're quite abrasive and they're quite sharp. And if a cat eats enough of that, then the irritation to their stomach can cause them to vomit and actually potentially bring up something in their stomach that they don't want. I've also seen in dogs that are nauseous, I've seen them try to reduce that by eating a lot of grass. But in that case, it's often quite damaging just because of they're already feeling unwell. For them to then eat a large amount of grass could potentially make whatever's going on there already worse. So in those situations, if you see your dog just going to town on the grass, probably a good time to intervene.
Yeah. So the cats are like, let me figure out how this works and use it to my advantage. The dogs are like, will this help? Do it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The next one is, why does my cat drink from the tap?
I think that harkens back to when cats were not drinking out of bowls. I mean, in some cats really don't like drinking out of bowls because their whiskers hit the edge of the bowl when they stick their head in. And that, I don't think that feels good for some cats. But generally in the wild, I think cats would have drunk out of streams, maybe as a preference to standing water, just because it's generally going to be cleaner and fresher than standing water.
Yeah, like I know some cats that like refuse to have standing water, and so you have to get them little like cat fountains.
That is absolutely right. Those cat fountains can be very useful, those cats who just do not feel like drinking. So.
Oh, and now we're on to the hard-hitting questions from the pre-primary class.
Oh, wow.
So I'll give you a moment to prepare yourself.
I think so. I'm just going to sit up and take a breath before we dig into these. So, yes, go for it.
So this is the first one. Why do vets have a stethoscope?
Okay. Well, thank you for starting me off on a relatively easily answered question. We use the stethoscope to listen to the heart and the lungs of our patients. In addition, the stethoscope can be pretty useful to listening to the sounds that come from the guts of animals as well. So we can, in particular, in animals like cows and horses, listening to those sounds can actually tell us a lot about how healthy the digestion of those animals is. So, great question.
Yes, very. 26, or the second pre-primary question, is, did you ever help a sloth?
Sadly, I didn't ever help a sloth. I have probably dreamed about helping a sloth at some point. But I certainly have some friends who went into zoological medicine. I bet they help sloths. But no, I'm afraid I haven't.
Slightly different profession.
Oh, yes.
More into the like jungly and wildy mm-hmm. rather yes. than yeah. the... Yeah, I totally have a sloth at my house.
Yeah. I don't know if you're allowed to have a sloth at your house, but I haven't exactly. looked into the municipal bylaws on that one.
Not sure. Probably not. And the third one is, what would you do if a dog stepped on a spike?
Okay. Well, if a dog stepped on a spike, I would hope the owners would give the veterinarian a call and we'd get the dog in. I think if the spike was still in there, we'd probably have to, after doing a quick check, we'd probably have to sedate that dog and take a look at removing that spike very carefully. And then after that, we'd have to really, really clean out that wound. Probably take an x-ray, make sure there are no bones or bits of that spike left in there. But then we'd really, really flush out that wound, put a bandage on it. We'd probably have to use some antibiotics in this situation because no matter how much cleaning we did, there'd probably be a few bacteria left in there. And then we just change those bandages every 2 or 3 days until it's all healed up.
I actually have a follow-up question okay. for that one. Do you give animals tetanus shots?
Certain animals you do. So in particular, in cats and dogs, they seem to be very resistant to tetanus. So I have never actually given a tetanus shot to a cat or a dog, but I know that horses in particular are very, very susceptible to tetanus. And so if they suffer any kind of wound at all, they're going to get an update on their tetanus shot because that's a disease we definitely want to avoid.
Very not good.
Yeah, very not good.
And the next one is, how do you help animals that are stuck in trees?
Oh, okay. Well, I think we, in many cases, those are, I think, usually often cats. In many cases, they've managed to get up there in the first place. So in some cases, we give them a little bit of time and they actually make it down. If not, I think that somebody who is very comfortable using ladders and can do it safely and with some experience in handling animals should go and see if they could take that animal down. But it's often worth, as I say, if they've made it up there, they can often make it down on their own. Giving them a chance to do that before we start putting anybody at risk.
Yes. And this next one is, what happens to our pets if or after they die?
Okay. Which well,
kind of sad.
That's a very interesting question. Spiritually, I can't really answer to that one, but I know most of the animals that I've owned and known have been very angelic. So I think they're going to be in a good place. But on a more kind of down-to-earth side of things, we do have most of the options to take care of an animal's body that you would have, that people have open to them as well. So cremation, burial being examples. So I personally have opted for cremation, so I have some little urns with some of my beloved pets from the past.
Yeah. Okay, now we're on to our last two questions, and they come from an extremely curious 3.5-year-old. Are you ready?
I think I might be.
Okay, so this one is, why do cats have fluff in their ears?
Yes, excellent question. I think the fluff in their ears is for, I think, a couple of reasons. Partially for sensation. So any of those hairs are going to have nerve endings at the base of the hair. So if that hair touches something, the cat will actually sense that. So it helps with orientation and that cat kind of avoiding trouble. I think it's also protective as well for keeping things from dropping into those ears too.
And finally, our last one is, why do cats have wet noses?
Again, an excellent question. I think I would say cats actually don't always have wet noses. Sometimes they have dry noses, and sometimes they have wet noses. And wet noses might be related to condensation from the warm air that they're breathing out, or maybe you've just run into your cat just after it's come from the water bowl, and it has a wet nose because it's dipped its nose in the water. But I've certainly touched a lot of cats' noses professionally that have been dry. So I hope that satisfies.
All right. A big thank you to Dr. West for joining us today and answering all of these questions. This was a fun opportunity to ask questions that children have for veterinarians but might not have the chance to ask. To our listeners, if you have enjoyed this episode, please follow us, hit the subscribe button, and leave a 5-star rating. Even better if you share it with your friends and family so we can spread the word together. Now turn up the love for your pets, and we'll see you next time on the podcast.